As I said, this month's worship theme is prophecy. And today I'm going to speak about what prophecy is and isn't, what prophecy brings to us, gives to us, and what it means to be a prophetic people. So, when you hear the word prophet, what is it that you think of? What is it that a prophet does? Anybody?
Tells the truth.
Don't give me the right answer yet. I want to hear the common, ordinary, wrong answer first. So what is it in the common sort of way? What is it we think prophets do?
Predict the future.
Thank you. Yes. For many people in everyday language, we think of prophets as people who predict the future, who foresee what is coming and attempt to warn us of it. And folks might even think that that idea of what a prophet is comes from the Hebrew Bible with its strong record of prophets, stories of prophets and prophecy. But if you actually read the stories of the prophets in the Hebrew Bible, and when you read of the life of the prophet Jesus in the Christian New Testament, these prophets are not ever predicting the future. They are doing very different things from that. So when we look at the prophets in the Hebrew Bible, when we look at Jesus of Nazareth as a prophet, we see variety and complexity of lots of kinds. Prophets showed up in many different social places. Some of them had privileged positions in courts and palaces and temples, like Nathan and Isaiah and Huldah. But some of them were free-ranging wanderers, spending their time in villages, maybe even the wilderness, often as marginalized people, like Elijah. Jesus also traveled far and wide, speaking to ordinary people as he encountered them in the towns and cities of Galilee. Some prophets were identified as men, but many were identified as women. Women prophets included Deborah, Miriam, Huldah, and Noadiah. So quite a variety there of people, of social location, of physical location. The Hebrew word most often used to identify prophets in the Hebrew Bible is nabi. It means one who is called, meaning to be a prophet is not something you initiate or name for yourself. You are called by God. And many prophets in the Hebrew and Christian scriptures, including Jesus, resisted this call mightily at some point or another. Another Hebrew word used for prophets is roah. It means to be a seer, one who sees. But this does not ever mean gazing into a crystal ball to see the future. Rather, prophets see clearly and deeply into this world as it is right now. They look to see how God is working in the world and how people are responding to divine imperatives. The third Hebrew term used for prophets is ish or ishet Elohim. This means a man or woman of God. So prophets belong to God, and their essential being is tied up in that fact. So these words used, all of them would be translated into prophet in English. They help us get at the nature of a prophet. So a prophet is one who is called by something outside of themselves, one who sees into the living current reality deeply and clearly, and one who is in their very essence belonging to God. In their role as those who speak about God and for God, prophets announce what God is about to do, and they manifest the judgments of God's, the justice of God's judgments. With oracles of judgment, the Hebrew prophets announce that God is about to punish, With oracles of salvation, they announced how God is about to deliver the people. They call out all the ways the world is or is not living up to God's will, God's law, and God's teaching. Christian minister Peter Santucci says it this way: the biblical prophets didn't so much predict the future as speak for God in a world that has gone askew by forgetting about God and goodness. And so the prophets spoke both about God and for God, reminding their listeners that they have forgotten something essential. And sometimes, even when those ancient prophets speak to what was clearly wrong in their own times, what was askew, they can sound remarkably current, even when their words are coming across thousands of years. Here are some verses from Jeremiah 4, 23 through 27. I looked on the earth, and lo, it was waste and void, and to the heavens, and they had no light. I looked on the mountains, and lo, they were quaking, and all the hills moved to and fro. I looked, and lo, there was no one at all, and all the birds of the air had fled. I looked, and lo, the fruitful land was a desert, and all its cities were laid in ruins before the Lord. This is seeing creation reversed, from the heavens to the earth to the land to the creatures to humans. All are being destroyed. To me, this sounds like a pretty good description of the results of climate change right now and going forward. Now, it's foolish, in my view, to look at that and say, oh my gosh, Jeremiah was predicting climate change 4,000 years ago. This is not a prediction. To read scripture that way is really kind of a waste of time. What it is really an affirmation of how prophets see over and over and over through many times and cultures and places the results of human folly, human error, human greed, and human violence. And so their words can speak to us, can remind us of that even now. No need to see them as predictions, because that is not useful. They are reminders of who we are sometimes as people. So we can also think of prophets, since the world is not all Christian and Jewish, and neither are we. We can think of the prophets more broadly as those who are compelled to see the world clearly and to speak of how the world is flawed, and to speak of what would be moral and righteous and just, to speak to how the world should be. And that's the hope part, which not every prophet, but most prophets have to bring to the table. They have to bring that hope, that possibility, that vision, and that guidance. So whether we're speaking of prophets in the Hebrew and Christian traditions, or prophets from other times and places and cultures, including right now in our own culture, what is often the reaction to prophets, these folks who see so clearly and name it like it is, how do people often respond to those who see deeply and clearly into what is wrong in our world? What often happens to prophets?
They get killed.
They get killed. I think I heard shunned.
Persecuted.
Yes.
Ignored.
Yes. A couple of things can happen. First, prophets are often ignored because folks don't want to hear it. They don't want to see the world clearly. It's too frightening. It's too disturbing. And the prophet's call for change is disruptive. And that, if it's powerful enough, can result in the prophet being attacked or marginalized or destroyed. The wonderful poet Mary Oliver writes about Jesus being received in this very way in her poem, Maybe. Sweet Jesus, talking his melancholy madness, stood up in the boat, and the sea lay down, silky and sorry. So everybody was saved that night. But you know how it is when something different crosses the threshold. The uncles mutter together. The women walk away. The young brother begins to sharpen his knife. Nobody knows what the soul is. It comes and goes like the wind over the water. Sometimes for days you don't think of it. Maybe after the sermon, after the multitude was fed, one or two of them felt the soul slip forth like a tremor of pure sunlight. Before exhaustion that wants to swallow everything gripped their bones and left them miserable and sleepy as they are now, forgetting how the wind tore at the sails before he rose and talked to it. Tender and luminous and demanding as he always was, and 1,000 times more frightening than a killer storm. So prophets can be frightening as they tell us, as they demand that we recognize what we don't want to admit, don't want to know. That other response to prophets, another response, is not resistance and rejection. It is distortion. We tame the prophet's message. We deliberately misunderstand it. Certainly that has happened with Jesus and with modern prophets such as Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. As Parker Palmer says, we domesticate the prophecy. Palmer writes, "I once heard a politician who calls himself a Christian say, in effect, while Jesus encouraged personal acts of compassion for the poor, it doesn't follow that he wants us to use other people's money, i.e. tax revenues, to put an economic safety net under the poor. That's compassion on the cheap." I disagree with that politician on so many counts, I can't enumerate them right now. Instead, I'll put a slight spin on a line from Anne Lamott. "You can safely assume you've created God in your own image when it turns out that God agrees with your tax policy." But the politician in question is not alone in making this kind of intellectual and spiritual mistake. So here's a memo to myself, Palmer writes. "Avoid the bad habit of domesticating the prophet of your choice, turning them into a cheerleader for your way of thinking and your way of life. Remember that all the great prophets were courageous and outrageous folks who railed against the powers that be, challenged self-satisfied righteousness, threatened the prevailing social order, and would find you falling short in some significant ways. I can't speak for Jesus, but I bet the farm that he'd be very unhappy with certain features of American life right now, not least its gross economic inequities and its callous culture of violence. I'm also pretty sure that many of my fellow Christians would be extremely uncomfortable with Jesus were he to show up in their churches. You just can't assume that the prophet of your choice will be all comfort and no cutting edge." So prophets are folks who are compelled to see the world clearly, to speak out against what is wrong, and give us some idea of what would be better, better morally, ethically, spiritually, and in terms of justice, physically, systemically. So what they bring to us is a compelling and justified vision of how it is and how it should become. They challenge us in ways that are disruptive and disturbing. We often will ignore, resist, attack, and/or distort them and their messages in the interest of our own perceived comfort and righteousness. Something else that's important to note, though, when we speak about prophets, is that it's also possible to speak of prophetic communities, prophetic peoples. We usually think of prophets as those individuals because that is often how they are presented to us, but prophets are never alone in their work. Not really, because that is not how the world changes. One of the most powerful current prophets I know of is the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II. He has created an entire new movement, a new Poor People's Campaign modeled on the work of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated not too long after he created a Poor People's Campaign. There is a Poor People's Campaign at the national level, but there are Poor People's Campaigns in many states now, including a very active one next door in Kansas. And oh, how I yearn for a Poor People's Campaign in Nebraska. So if you would like to see prophecy happening in real time, I highly recommend that you connect with Reverend Dr. Barber and his partner, the Reverend Liz Theo Harris, and the Poor People's Campaign. You can do that online, on YouTube, on their website, and on Facebook, because they have a powerful presence in all those places. So speaking of those prophetic people, the Reverend Rebecca Parker speaks of it this way. She says, behind the lone prophet who speaks up, there always is a group. It is always a mistake to imagine that lone prophets are really alone. We should think of Jesus this way as well. It is a mistake to see him as an isolated, heroic individual. It is better to see him as the crest of a wave, the sparkling foam breaking brightly from the force of a whole ocean moving and swelling up from underneath. I sense among Unitarian Universalists these days a deep desire to affirm the ocean that is within and beneath the voices of individual conscience that we celebrate. Sometimes I see this too, that as a larger movement of Unitarian Universalists, we have a stronger desire than in the past to be part of a vast ocean moving up to support and affirm and join our modern prophets. So how do we do that? How do we become a prophetic congregation, a prophetic people, whether we're talking about ourselves here right in this congregation or our larger Unitarian Universalist movement? Well, we can do a few things. One, we have to listen to the prophets we have among us and not resisting, attacking, taming, or domesticating them. We can support prophets and join in when and how we can by engaging in actions together as community that make a difference. And we can engage in becoming a prophetic people by recognizing our own capacity as individuals and together for prophetic witness. As Rebecca Parker says, our times ask us to become prophetic witnesses. By prophetic witness, I mean our capacity to see what is happening, to say what is happening, and then to act in accordance with what we know. Prophetic witness is the ability to name those places where we resist knowing what needs to be known, where we resist doing what needs to be done. Now, this congregation has shown itself to be a prophetic people by creating the only support group for transgender children and youth in this area, by being part of building a home through Habitat for Humanity, and now by adopting an immigrant family in need of our support through the Omaha Area Sanctuary Network. You can read all about these things in our order of service and in our newsletter and on our website, and you can do your prophetic part. So these are three places where right now you can engage in prophetic witness for a better world. But there's another aspect to prophetic witness. As a prophetic people, we also must commit to living our seven principles and our covenant of right relations. It doesn't matter how much good you think you're doing if while doing your good, you violate our covenants and principles. You've made things worse and not better. So we become prophetic and prophets and a prophetic people only as we live into and witness to our principles and covenants. I close with these words from James Luther Adams, likely the greatest Unitarian Universalist theologian and prophet of the middle 20th century. He writes, "The prophetic liberal church is the church in which all members share the common responsibility to attempt to foresee the consequences of human behavior, both individual and institutional, with the intention of making history instead of being merely pushed around by it. Only through the prophetism of all believers can we together foresee doom and mend our common ways. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen."